You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @hiv_hour and Instagram at @hivhour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on radioreverb.com.
Hi everyone, how's everybody this week on the HIV Hour? What sort of week you all had?
Hey guys, you all right?
Yeah, hey Tony, I'm doing good, thanks. How are you both?
Yeah, doing good. Yeah, just getting scared because July's nearly past us, and I'm thinking, what have I done in July? I'm sure I've done lots of stuff, but it's just gone so quickly, hasn't it? So
yeah, I think, what have I done this year, Sue?
there
is that. Yeah, it's well, it's so that feeling like, you know, if we get the last sunshine day, it's like I've got to get out in the sun. Got to get out in the sun.
Yeah, desperation,
crazy.
Yeah. Well, just to let our listeners know that what we just had a song by the lovely Sylvester, You Make Me Feel, and I believe, Steve, you chose this one for our Pride Week show. Why did you choose our lovely Sylvester?
I sure did. So, obviously, this, I think anything by Sylvester is something that you can get up and dance to no matter what age you are, no matter where you are. You know, you hear a Sylvester song and, you know, you've just got to get up and shake your thing. But also, obviously, we lost Sylvester to AIDS.
We did.
And, you know, I just think his music is a wonderful reminder of just the amazing performer and the amazing strength he had as a human being. So, yeah.
Right, great. And of course, we're talking about Pride this week, aren't we, Tony? We've got, unfortunately, no parades, but it doesn't stop us trying to sort of, give a theme of on social media, on the radio, but unfortunately...
I think you can support these things, without going out banging your drum and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
It shows the people in the background giving support sometimes makes more of an impact than going out there and doing the old naked bike cycle or whatever it's called. Yeah.
And a question I want to ask you both guys, and I get this constantly asked in the straight community, and I always like to sort of talk about this throughout Pride. Why do you think we're still commemorating, celebrating Pride? What do you reckon, Stephen?
I hope that we will always continue to celebrate Pride, because I think that we can never forget, you know, the people that have come before us. I think that Pride is a wonderful day of celebration, you know, but it is also a day for me. I think I've realized this as I've got older, you know, it's also a day where we have to tell those people's stories and, you know, and march or party or what in honor of them, you know, because there's so many people that have come and we've lost, and you know, and there's so many people that are the older generation now that that I just think need to still be made part of Pride, because it's for everybody, you know.
Totally.
What's your take on it, Tony?
I think you think about the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and even 60s, where it wasn't, like Stephen was saying, you know, the people that have gone before us. You know, I know when I came out when I was a lot younger, it was quite hard. But you think about, you know, it was illegal. People in America had to go to conversion therapy and stuff. So I think Pride is definitely a celebration of life. It's also commemoration about those who we've lost. But also, I think it's a great celebration to show those that are going to be us in the future, like the younger generation, you know, to give respect to those that have gone before them. And I think, I think it's important because it shows the younger generation, like, you know, the old ones can party, but it's like, you know, just showing a bit of respect for those who have laid our little yellow brick road. Do you know what I mean?
Let me just say at this point, it is still illegal in some countries around the world, and it isn't thinking, and it is. And I don't think a lot of people understand this. And I get comments in the ridiculous. Oh, why don't we have a straight pride? I says, absolutely. Yeah. I says, but think of this. Think about, as a straight person, if you've ever had to fight to be who you are,
love who you want to love.
Please do go out and have that straight pride. If you've ever had to wake up one morning and tremble to think that you have got to fight for who you are and to be a place in society, please do think again. I always answer with that. But you get these, I've got to have a straight pride. You know, what's it all about?
I sort of think about, like, when I came out when I was a lot younger, and I remember being so in fear of telling my mum and dad that I was gay, and so in fear that what's going to happen, because my mum always used to say to me, you'll always disappoint me if, one, you're gay, or two, you're a drug user. And it was so, like, it was a desperate situation, because I thought, I can't be who I'm not going to be. So I think also it's, pride can also be that strength, that support, to know that there are people on the same path as you. They might be on the same rainbow color as you, but you know, there is support out there, and there are so many charities that are involved with the pride around the world. I think it can be a good sense of support for the youth or the older people that come out as trans, or the bisexuals that come out as gay. I think it's that support network, and I think that can be helpful as well.
And I think we are such a wonderfully diverse and colourful and amazing community that it is just so good to see, you know, that day of people just being free and just, as you say, so not having that fear of being out and being gay. And, you know, I know going into town sometimes on the tube on Pride Day, you will go and you'll be on a tube with this packed tube of just overly outrageous, camp, screaming, you know, just
people, but
it's just wonderful, you know, people with their pride t-shirts on, or their flags or their banners or whatever it might be. And I remember, not last year, the year before, doing it and just sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is amazing, you know.
What I'm going to miss again this year, because obviously with COVID and what have you, we didn't have the pride parade, understandably, because so many thousands come into London and Brighton, understandably that we had to say no to it, or they had to say no to it. And obviously that we can't have it again this year. But I mean, I've done the pride parade at March, whatever, representing the Tone Signals Trust, and so many other wonderful HIV organisations go on that parade to send out a message. And I tell you what touches me every time, and I've been doing it for many years, what touches me every time, obviously I represent the THT, but you know, a charity, but there's so many wonderful, you've got the Sussex Beacon, you've got Lunch Positive, all these amazing organizations that, you know, really do something within the community. And what I love every time I'm sort of waving my THT flag, and you know, and there's so many people on our piece of the parade, I've had people come out of the crowds and hold my hand and say thank you, and that touches me. Thank you, you looked after such and such, and thank you for what you do. And I've had people look at me in tears, clapping, and it gets me going every single, and I've been doing this for many years, and I think, oh my God, you know. And then and when THT comes around the corner, the enormous, the cap is, it's It's just, oh my God, we're so much recognised, like so many other amazing charities that are there for a reason. And you know that, you know, I think we're getting all sort of choked up as we're sort of talking now, and it's so important, and I just love it, and I just, it's just a shame. Hopefully next year when things are clearer, we'll be able to sort of you know, show representation, and hopefully it'll be as bigger than ever, and we'll see. Let's wait and see.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, you've just tuned into the HIV Hour. This is Sue, Josh, Tony and Stephen. We're commemorating, celebrating Pride. You've just listened to one of my favourites, Gloria Gaynor from the disco age. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I Will Survive. And when Josh asked me, what does that mean to you? And I said, that means more to me than what it did back in the day when I was dancing night and day to it. I Will Survive. I Will Survive regardless of anyone thinking who I am and what I live with. And I will always survive. So that's my bit for Pride. And I know I know Josh is playing one of yours, isn't he, Tony? Which one's that?
Yeah.
Josh is playing one of your tunes, isn't he?
He's playing the Freemasons with Kylie Minogue, and it's the one. Freemasons are obviously from Brighton, and Kylie is like, I love her. So it's a really good tune. And it just makes me think about like times in my life where, you know, you meet someone and it's like, you know, anyway, la, la, la.
Okay. We have now got, guys, an amazing interview from the Lawson unit, which Josh done last week. Really fantastic interview with the lovely Daniel Nessa and Alex, the lovely guys and gals from the Lawson unit.
Mm.
Great.
Yeah, they're amazing. Nessa's so fun. She always makes it funny when you're down there. She's always really friendly.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour. I have the pleasure in introducing three amazing people who work in their Lawson unit in Brighton. So I'll introduce... Could you introduce yourself individually to our listeners?
Hi, I'm Ness. I've worked in the Lawson unit for 24 years almost, and I'm your senior receptionist on the desk.
My name's Adam. I'm a staff nurse, and I've been here for I think about 3 years now. I worked on the inpatient unit before, and then I came over here on a job rotation and loved it so much I never left.
Fabulous.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm Daniel Richardson. I'm one of the consultants here. I've been working in the Lawson unit since 2006. And actually went away for a year to Australia, but came back because I love it so much. And before that, I worked in London and did my HIV training there.
So you've worked for 20, Nessa, you've worked for 24 years here, so that's quite a while, isn't it?
Yeah, before here, I worked in London, which is the Caldecott now. But before the Caldecott, I worked down at St Giles, where it was a crummy little old building. It was all falling down. It was so sad because that was the start of the AIDS epidemic when people came in. I remember my first clinic, I had 6 patients, and 2 weeks later, 4 of those died. But then I got 8, and that's how it's roller coasted.
Right.
So it's been an incredibly sad journey, but it's been a brilliant journey, and it's been brilliant to be part of it.
Yeah.
And see where I am today. It's magnificent.
Yeah. And you're on the front line, aren't you?
The most important thing was with me, and when I had this conversation with Martin, we always wanted the Lawson unit to be the department where you walked in, you were meeting your friends, you had nothing to worry about, there was no anxiety, no nervousness. You come in and you were treated just as one of our friends, one of our family, and that's how it's been.
Yeah.
And I never ever want it to change.
Now, and you feel that when you walk in, because I come obviously for my bloods and to see Daniel, and that's what I get. So that's just
so that means we're doing well.
Yeah,
and if we're not doing well, we haven't got a problem with anybody letting us know.
Yeah.
So we can always tweak, because there's nothing wrong with constructive criticism.
Yeah.
I mean, the extraordinary thing about this department actually is that patients come here really to see Nessa on the front desk, and seeing me, their doctor and the nurses is really secondary to the whole experience. And how fantastic is that they have such a great experience here, because they get a lot of love and care from Nessa, and that particularly the new patients who are often very nervous, they get a great service from the reception team. We're very lucky.
Yeah, and it's really important that, isn't it, that first engagement with the Josh. Service user or patient. Yeah, absolutely.
Josh, it's never changed, which is the saddest thing. I can honestly say from years and years ago, when you get that initial diagnosis, you're positive, it doesn't change. The life goes out of them. It's like rabbits in a headline, and it has not changed. And I think that is the sad thing.
Yeah.
That is so sad because of the stigma still. So that's something we've working on big time.
Well, stigma is the big thing, isn't it? Because we talk about it on the show a lot. It's what our show is not built on that, but it's keeping that message coming across, isn't it, to people, and keep saying that about how stigma can affect people.
Yeah, it is, and it still affects the family. I think it was a couple of years ago, we had a young boy who was 19 that was diagnosed.
Yeah.
He came in with his mother, and his mother was in a terrible state, and she said, oh, I've got to go home, I've got to go and buy new towels, I've got this, and I went, why, has Debenhams got a sale on? What are you going to do that? And this is where the sad thing is, that where are we going wrong? Why isn't it out there?
Yeah.
That this doesn't have to be. This is just something that we live with now.
Do you think it's fear, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big problem with stigma is it's got so many knock-on effects, you know, to your personal relationships, your home life, your work life, the way you take your tablets. So I think there is a lot of fear around people getting tested, even if they know that they've had some high-risk things going on.
Yeah.
And the information and what they would do with that if it were to come back as a positive result is sometimes a lot for people to think about, so they kind of bury it.
Yeah, and then from them images from a long time ago still stay with people, don't they? Actually,
yeah,
it's not trying to get rid of that. The most images of the tombstone and
it never leaves you.
No,
with your
it's ingrained in you, isn't it? Ingrained in our psyche.
Yeah, it's very sad.
I think the kind of hidden nature of sexual health and HIV clinics in the past really serves badly for the whole arena of stigma, because it just means that people aren't aware of the fact that people with HIV live very normal lives now, because it's all hidden away, and, it's people like you, Josh, and other high profile people in society who talk about their HIV and are visible and healthy with their HIV, and us talking about well-being and really trying to constantly chip away at those stigma messages.
Yeah.
I really have an issue with healthcare workers, because I think healthcare workers, particularly doctors, but not only doctors, can really perpetuate ideas of stigma. So people going to their GPs, being seen in hospital, being seen for vaccinations, and the whole kind of infectiousness and contagiousness issues around HIV, most of which haven't got any kind of scientific bearing, continually perpetuated, and we need to continue fighting those battles and breaking down those stigma by education, not by blame, by just kind of making sure that we always tackle them in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, it's just chipping away, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how's COVID been for the last, because obviously we've come out of restrictions, it's been like 18 months of
actually COVID, I have to say, when it was hell on earth when it first came out, the phone constantly rang from the minute you got in to the minute that you left the phone. People were so scared, so frightened, and I'm going to say they're still frightened now. It hasn't changed. It's the fear of coming out, coming into the clinic, are they going to be safe, because they've gone through a lot with their diagnose, and a lot of people relate this as early stages. They're going through this fear thing. People lost their jobs, which was really sad. The mental health has gone off the scale. So it has been really, really fearful. And the way of doing things is different. Every single day we have a huddle and we have to go by guidelines.
Yeah.
You know, some of these guidelines, even in yourself, you think, oh, really, do we have to? But we are controlled sometimes.
Yeah.
We bend the rules now and again. We won't talk about that. But we're there for you as a team, the whole team.
Yeah.
And there is nobody that's rejected in phone calls or anything. It's always somebody at the end of a line.
Which helps, yeah, definitely.
And that means for everything, doesn't it?
Mm.
Whether they couldn't get food, which you had Gary doing lunch positive, there was always someone that we could get them for help.
Yeah, and I think it was running very differently to normal, the clinic, because a lot of the nurses were going back over to the COVID wards. We had two staff over in ITU working. So I've had two redeployments, and so have some of the other nurses.
Yeah.
So you're running with far less staff than normal, and people aren't getting to see health professionals. They're not getting to see their GP. They're not getting to see dentists. So we're kind of triaging people that have got broken teeth or something that would normally be handled by a GP, yeah, who they're just finding it impossible to get to see because of the pandemic. So it's been a really different kind of 18 months, or however long it's been now.
Yeah. Time's weird, actually. I found that really weird. Talk about things that was like 2 years ago, but it felt like it was a week ago. That's right. It's very strange. Yeah.
I think one of the most disturbing aspects of COVID for me working in the Lawson unit is it's really exposed the amount of loneliness and social isolation that some people in the community suffer from probably all of the time, and it's just made it worse. And it's very distressing talking to people on the phone who have not been able to see anybody, friends, family, or able to socialise, and how important socialisation is for us as human beings. And I think if you've got HIV and you're living on your own in Brighton, that everything closes down for you. It's really distressing, really hard for people.
Yeah, and we're lucky in Brighton, actually, aren't we? Because we say this again on the show, but how lucky we are in Brighton, because there's so many places that haven't got these services. So
I was going to say, some places don't have anything at all, so they must feel that isolated a lot of the time in terms of their HIV and, you know, not having the support network around them.
Yeah, definitely.
I think going forward, though, there are some opportunities that that lockdown has given us as a service, in that we've been able to innovate, do things that we weren't able to do, that we wanted to do, using digital technology for consultations for people who don't want to come in necessarily. So there are going to be some positive offspins from this time, and certainly in sexual health, that's massively changed the way that we work in the STI clinic, seeing more and more people using digital platforms. And the good thing about that is it enables us space and time to see people face-to-face who need that face-to-face opportunities, and that gives longer time for people who, for example, are engaged in chemsex and have drug use that's out of control. We've got more time to spend with those guys.
Yeah. And those services are there, aren't they? So it's just getting them to come in in different ways. You know? Yeah. I mean, I remember when I got when I was diagnosed in 2002, but I didn't come for my bloods or didn't go into treatment until 2007 because I worked in a barber shop and I didn't want people to see me. So that was going through my head all the time that I can't do that. It took me a while to do that. So you see, that's probably still going through some people's heads, isn't it? So, it's trying to break that down, isn't it? Yeah.
The other good thing about COVID is that I think there's more HIV testing going on, because people are recognised that symptoms of COVID can be similar to symptoms of HIV. Therefore, lots of clinical pathways in hospital settings include thinking about HIV testing. And certainly in the beginning of the COVID outbreak in March, April, May of 2020, we had more HIV diagnoses from people coming to hospital than we'd normally expect. And so hopefully improving the profile of HIV testing, normalising HIV testing in that setting is a good thing in terms of trying to, you know, reach those, that 90-90-90 or 95-95-95 target where we're testing everybody.
Yeah. So, so we're just going to have a little break for a musical interlude. Adam, you've got a track you want us to play. Could you enlighten us?
Yeah, so I have picked Kylie, Better the Devil You Know, for many reasons. One was because when she played Pride in Brighton a couple of years ago, it was just amazing. And I just really loved seeing her live. And just it reminds me of growing up and being young and my mum buying me her music, and she must have known from a young age which direction it was heading in. But I just love it.
I like that era of Kylie's amazing.
Yeah, you can't beat that era.
So let's have a listen to Kylie Minogue, Better the Devil You Know.
I conferred with our furry friend. Radio Reverb.
Yes. So what services do you have for on the list? Can you just tell our listeners some of the services you have?
Well, in-house, we run, not only do we run our regular clinics, we've got 16-plus clinics.
Wow.
That go on, which brilliant. A lot of you wouldn't have heard of, obviously, because if you haven't had certain diagnoses, your consultant doesn't need to refer you to these. So to name them all, I'm just going to have a go. We have a joint renal clinic, we have a cardiac, we have sunflower clinic, we have gastro clinic. Oh my God, I'm going on. But sunflower clinic, let's enlighten on the sunflower clinic. That's run by Yvonne Galise, and it's a brilliant clinic if you're a woman, because you can go there and you can discuss any form of childbirth, pregnancy, infertility, menopause. Any women-related problems will be discussed, and you've got a brilliant team there that will be there. It's not only Yvonne, she's got a specialist nurse, she's got a health advisor, and I do believe we have Hattie from the Beacon that's involved in that. So that is a wonderful one. Yeah. And there's, what is the other one?
Can I just start, because Sue co-hosts the show, she asked a question, she wants me to ask you a question about... So she's thinking, because she's going through the menopause.
Oh, bless her.
And she's starting to feel a bit anxious and worried about how drugs will interfere with the HIV medication. So, yes, how that was...
I mean, I think the first part of the question is that we know that HIV clinicians are not particularly good at recognising when women have perimenopausal symptoms or menopausal symptoms. So making the diagnosis is really important, because women who going through the menopause have a terrible time in terms of mental health, physical health. And actually, HRT is relatively safe in people with HIV and can be administered along with antiretroviral therapy. Occasionally there are some interactions, but most of them can be overcome. Yeah. And it's safe and effective for women and creates well-being. So I think one of the things we need to think about over the next 5-10 years of managing people with HIV is focusing much more on well-being, and that's not just things like lifestyle such as smoking, alcohol, exercise. It's making sure that people's lives are as optimal as possible and they're happy in life with their HIV, and their HIV is a small part of their life. Mm. And life doesn't revolve around their HIV and their medication interactions.
Yeah.
So the answer to her question is all of those things can be overcome. Yeah. With HRT and it's safe.
Right, that's great. Yeah. And clinics like the Sunflower.
The Sunflower. I feel quite embarrassed because I can't actually remember when it started, but it's been going a few years now. But all these other clinics, the joint clinics, are absolutely brilliant, because if you are diagnosed with a heart problem as well, with Duncan and one of our colleagues across the road, who's James Coburn, they do a joint clinic.
Right.
So there's always an avenue. So if suddenly your health is dipping a bit in one of these avenues, you've got help.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fantastic in here.
I think one of the most important joint clinics is the Silver Clinic, which is for people ageing with their HIV, because actually now in Brighton, more than 50% of our patients are over the age of 50, and therefore our patients are acquiring and getting other illnesses that we're having to manage in combination with their HIV. And doing that in collaboration with the Care of the Elderly team, where they come and help us manage people, is absolutely the most optimal way of managing these people.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, our patients are growing older and older happily as a consequence of these services.
Yeah.
And we have our own psychologist, which is brilliant. And we have a nurse specialist clinic as well.
We've got the memory clinic, which is really good. So when the patients come to us for their bloods, we'll do an assessment, PHQ, and look at mood and things like that. But we also ask questions about memory. So do you have any concerns about your memory? Has anyone close to you noticed anything that worries them? And then we can refer them, if needed, into the Orange Clinic, which is all looking at memory. Yeah. And we can kind of handle it all in-house, which is quite comforting for a lot of people who would find it quite overwhelming to be going to different hospitals and different places.
Some of those familiar faces, isn't it?
Exactly. And that definitely increases our attendance rates. So when patients who come to the Lawson Unit are sent to other departments, they tend to not turn up for appointments, and there's all the kind of stigma and issues about seeing new teams that come into play. So actually having joint clinics is actually financially and for patients much more beneficial.
Yeah, fabulous. So what's the future for the healthcare in Brighton, do you think?
Well, I think the future for us is to A, really embrace digital platforms for managing people with HIV, and that should be an option. So it's not, you don't have to do it, but giving people the option of managing their HIV using mobile phone apps, maybe having less appointments. And tallied by that is the amazing technologies around HIV care that are on the horizon in terms of injectable antivirals and implants. Right. So, you know, that's around the corner for all of us in the UK. Hopefully by the middle of next year, we'll start to see the first patients receiving cabotegravir, which will be the first drug that's injected.
Wow.
So it's very exciting. And then how we fit that into patients' journey coming to the clinic, how often they come, will hopefully be prescribed by a joint effort between patients and the clinic, how that's going to work for them, what's their best experience going to be. Is that using a mobile phone app? Is that maybe going to some outreach setting to have their injections rather than either coming to the Lawson unit? So hopefully that will evolve really nicely in a co-designed way with patients.
Yeah.
For me, the future... not many years, and then I'll be retired. So just thinking, I'll be coming back making tea. But I just absolutely love how it has gone forward, and I feel excited for the team because it's brilliant. So what would you see of it?
I think just keep working on stigma, which is an ongoing issue, as we've discussed. And, you know, we're facing new challenges like a big rise in chemsex, which is happening everywhere. Yeah. So I think we'll keep doing work into that and seeing kind of what's driving that. And, yeah, I think that's the way it would hopefully go.
Good. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the future is very bright for us. I think back to when Martin Fisher was around and the conversations we had about our finances, about our staffing. But actually, we're in a fantastic place for lots of different reasons, but mainly because this team works so well together and also reaches out to other stakeholders such as Terence Higgins Trust and the Beacon. And we work really well in collaboration with those other teams.
Yeah, and that's why it works, isn't it?
Yeah.
Notice that Brighton's quite a community. Feel, isn't it? People help each other, and
it's like a jigsaw. You just fit in that jigsaw.
Yeah, which is great.
It works well.
So, what do you love about your job, Daniel?
I love the people that I work with, the patients and my colleagues, such as Adam and Nessa. I'm so lucky that I can come into work, and even if I'm feeling a bit grotty on a Monday morning, I'm met with smiles and laughter, both from patients and my colleagues.
Yeah, great. Nessa?
What do I love about my job? There's never a day that I've never, ever wanted to walk through that door. It didn't matter what ugly clouds were going on in my life or that. I would expect every day to be exciting, and I do.
Yeah.
And you'll always get an AM smile and a PM smile. It will never, ever fade.
Fabulous.
And that's what we... And like I say, you have a family here. And I'm going to call it a family because that's how I feel. Yeah. They are my family when I come in. And the support from... all of our colleagues, if we're having a bit of a bad time, you just knock on the door and they just say, come in. There's never, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
It's, what can we do? And that's unique.
So important, isn't it?
That is so unique.
Important.
And always give to that patient that needs a cuddle, yes. Because they always want a cuddle.
Absolutely. Adam?
I just love how holistic it is after being on kind of wards where you don't have the time for kind of anything beyond, you know, the bare bones, really, to be able to come here and do a well-rounded holistic assessment of someone's mental health, physical health, sexual health, you know, financially, are they okay, is their housing safe, any domestic violence at home. You just can go away thinking, if they don't see anyone else in the health profession for a year, I feel like I've done a really good job of giving a glimpse into their life at this point. So that's what I love about it.
So one of the most incredible things about working in the Lawson unit is the way that we all work as a team, multidisciplinary, and we're as holistic and patient-focused as possible. So I'll give you an example. One of my patients, unfortunately, was dying of cancer and was wheelchair-bound by this point. And he, from the hospice, decided that he wanted to come and say goodbye to the team, but he really wanted to come by and say come to say goodbye to Nessa, who you'd known for more than 20 years, coming to the Lawson unit. And it was really heart-wrenching to see this dying man being wheelchaired into the clinic with a big smile on his face. And he spent more than an hour with Nessa, who gave him a hug, who talked to him, held his hand, and was able to say goodbye. And that's an example of amazing healthcare, amazing teamwork from Nessa, who's our amazing receptionist. And I'll never forget that as a way of the way that we should all love each other and look after each other. And the care, the real honest care that you give to our patients is incredible, Nessa.
Yeah, but it's not just me, Di. It is the whole of you. There's a big team. And with their love and care, it makes... I see, I'm getting emotional now because I'm going back on this
time. But you do lead by example, and I think people, new members of staff, doctors, nurses and admin staff coming to the department, and they see the kind of work that you do, and you're so loving and giving with your skills and what you do that we everybody follows your kind of example, and that's really good, really positive.
Yeah, only because my mother would have knocked my head off it. The girl from Peckham did good.
But that relates, doesn't it? If you're giving what you're giving out, other people can pick up anyway.
But it doesn't hurt, Josh. It doesn't hurt to be kind and loving.
Yeah, I've been here quite a long time now, and I've seen certainly members of the admin team start and really struggle to communicate with the whole team because it's a bit overwhelming when you start in a place like this. And they've just grown under Nessa's kind of tutelage, if you like.
Our little Caroline.
Yeah,
is my second now. She's lovely and she'll always be there for you all.
Yeah.
I'm proud of her. Yeah, we've grown from dandelions to roses.
Fabulous.
We still have to be reflective of the work that we do. And I think it's more and more important as time goes on with the internet that we're constantly getting feedback from patients about their experience and making sure that things that don't work well for them, we're able to adjust and make right. And we have to continue to do that.
Yeah.
And I think most of us are quite... We're always trying to think, how can we do this better? Mm. We can only do it better with the support of patients because we don't understand what patients' journeys are like unless we talk to them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, come to the end of the interview, actually... Could you just give our listeners any contact details or anything they might need to...
Yeah, so, you can go onto our website, which is brightonsexualhealth.com, and there's a whole area, part of the... there's a whole part of the website that's dedicated to HIV.
Sorry, I put you on the spot there, Daniel, sorry.
I don't know the phone number.
This is we've got a new website that we can be contacted. Yes.
And then there's a new website, apparently, which is uhsussex.lawsonunit.nhs.net.
That's the phone number.
And then you can contact us on our phone number, which is 01273 664722.
Option one, the other
option for people who are struggling is that you can turn up and knock on the door and Vanessa will be there waiting for you to help you.
And we will try and use our magic wand. You thought Harry Potter was clever, you come here.
So just before we finish, Pride's coming up, and I don't know if you're going to... I know it's not the same as it was, so it's going to be a bit different this year, but are you celebrating Pride? So
we'll be having our own internal special celebration.
Yes. So, has anyone got a lovely Pride anthem we could finish on?
Well, I'd like to go back to when I first was taken to heaven, and as I walked in, they played it. Donna Summer was playing I Feel Love, so I'd like that to be played, but I think... Daniel's got one, and so has...
No, I think Donna Summer's fantastic for me.
What do you
think? I like that.
Donna Summer is a great choice. Yeah, it's timeless.
I feel love, timeless and perfect. Yeah, we'll finish with that. So thank you so much.
I actually
want to thank you from my listeners as well, so for all your hard work you do and to make us feel fantastic when, you know, support us in every way. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And yeah, you're listening to HRVOR on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Here's Donna Summer, I Feel Love.
Yeah, I feel love.
So a little bit of community news, as it's our Pride edition. I'm with Gary Smith, who works for an organisation called CGL in Brighton. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Could you tell our listeners what CGL is?
Well, CGL is Change, Grow, Live. which is the Brighton and Hove Recovery Service. So we are the drug and alcohol service, and we've been in place since 2020. But unfortunately, we've had the pandemic, which has been a difficult time for lots of people living in the city, and including ourselves, as we were looking to establish the service at that time. And during the pandemic, we have been inundated with referrals from people wanting to access support and help. Yeah. And as we're coming up to Pride weekend, you know, we realise it's been a difficult time for a lot of people. And I'm just here to remind everybody that that the recovery service is here to offer support for people, whether it's harm reduction advice or you know, we're offering a group program, various groups where people can access and through mutual aid and 12-step recovery, and obviously we're moving forward from the pandemic, so we're looking to offer face to face. I'm going to be out in the community as I've been before, linking in with the LGBT services I work very closely with.
Great. And so Pride's coming up, and have you got any advice for people who...
If anybody's struggling at all, or, you know, if you want some support or help or advice, you can obviously check our website, which is Brighton and Hove Recovery Service, Change, Grow, Live. You can also self-refer via that website. Yeah. You can also contact the main service, which is based at Richmond House, Richmond Road, on Brighton 731900, or alternatively, you can email brighton.info@cgl.org.uk. All of you, whatever you're doing this weekend or over the Pride weekend, keep yourself safe, and remember, we're here to offer support if it's needed.
That's great. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
So, thank you. Thanks for listening to the HRV Hour. Have a great Pride. Take care. Keep safe.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.